Our first speaker actually has the flu this morning. I don't know if you want me to tell him that or not, Glenn, but under the weather a little bit, and so his voice might be a little softer than normal, but Glenn Ponser got his PhD at Kansas State University, went to Michigan State for a number of years, was on faculty there, and we were blessed to bring him back to Kansas in, what, March of 2010, is it roughly when you came back? Maybe a month or two off. And he's becoming a legendary ag economist, really working with production systems, but also the consumer preference for meats and understanding the consumer-driven portion of the swine industry. And today we've asked him to address a timely topic, and one that I think with what's happened in the last year and where we're headed forward will be right on top, and that is how we grow our industry economically in the swine industry. And so with that, Glenn, welcome to Kansas State again, and we appreciate everything, and if you need something for your voice, please let me know. Please join me in welcoming Glenn again.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Absolutely.
I do appreciate it, and I apologize for my voice. Those of you who've heard me before, I can be pretty, hopefully, honest and ethical, as Jim noted, but also kind of blunt and cold-hearted as an economist. I assure you I'm going to do that as well, but you may not hear some of those points as well as in the past, so I'll apologize a little bit for that. But I'm going to try to plow through this. I will tell you in advance, before I go through all my slides, two things. One is I was tardy in pulling these slides together, again, as all good academic economists are, so you don't have these in your handbook, but my last slides, I'm going to show you where they're posted, and if you have trouble finding them, I'm happy to help you with that. And secondly, I have my iPad up here recording my wonderful froggy voice, but I always try to do that to create an MP4, an audio file anyhow, but I'm particularly doing that today because I'm a little bit concerned with somebody in the back of the room or when I'm looking away from the mic, you're hearing me even worse than in the past. So feel free to cut me off if I'm not being clear, but that being said, I'm trying to capture it so that the net impact of all this is what we're all striving for. So when Jim asked me to pull together this talk, of course, there's lots of things that I could talk about. What I'm going to try to do here in these slides is first give you an update of what I think is going on throughout the entire meat complex, because I think it's important to recognize where pork fits within the multi-meat, multi-livestock species arena, because you're not the only industry that's thinking about or in the midst of expansion, so it's important to keep in mind, understand some of the triggers for that and what that means, and then of course I'll dive into some specific details about the pork industry, and then I'm gonna circle back and basically, if you like, score my tone on bullish and bearish aspects that are going on, and I'll give you some reasons for each of you to be bearish, and I'll give you some reasons for each of you to be bullish, and of course, each of you will be in different spots on the net of those two, but that's kind of a roadmap for our talk here. All right, so let's start on a good note. For those of you that can read, this is really big. This is green for a reason, all right? The feedstuff environment is a lot better than it's been in the past. Yes, it varies over time, but the entire livestock complex is a lot more happier than they were 2 years ago. And we have to remember that. I guess lean hogs have come down a lot in the last 6 weeks, 12 weeks. We can talk about that in a minute too, but long-term context, I need you to recognize the reason for so much bullishness, not just in the pork industry, but as well as the broiler, as well as the cattle industry, is the feed cost side, or in general, just inputs, are a lot cheaper than they've been in the past. And most people expect that to be the new norm, if you like, right? Some people describe it as we're on the front end of the era of livestock, and we just ended the era of the row crop farmer, right? I don't know if I would describe it exactly that way, but the point is, feed costs are a lot lower than they've been before, and that's the reason that we're talking about expansion throughout this talk. One way to show you that is obviously just to show you corn prices. I'm not going to belabor every one of these slides, but a lot of these slides I get from a group called LMIC, Livestock Marketing Information Centers out in Denver. They pull together a lot of different data points from USDA, put together these standard format charts so I don't have to, so I can focus on attending meetings and so forth, but I want to give them credit because they're the real originators of these charts. Some of these charts have the same kind of color coding, so I'm going to describe them and then you'll see it as we go forward, is a historical five-year average is always on these red lines. So you can see up here the 2008-2009 marketing year through the 2012-2013 is the five-year previous average. Last year's is the dashed blue, let's call that blue line, 13-14 marketing year. And then the current solid line, right, is obviously lower yet. The punchline of this, obviously, is corn's a lot cheaper than it's been before, right? You all know that. That's the reason all livestock species are in the midst of expansion, I would say. One of the reasons. It's a core reason. Another resource I want to highlight, and I'm going to do this for a couple reasons. One is more details on this are coming out in about 10 days, is USDA puts out 10-year, or we're going to call them long-term forecast of many, many things, right? And that includes how large the hog industry is going to be, what corn price will be, and a lot of those things that are germane for this discussion, and they update it once a year. They put out an early release of those numbers right before Christmas, The final release with all the numbers is coming out here, middle of February, the 11th is what I have up there. There's the link. I encourage you, for those of you that like these kind of talks, to watch for that. Some of the numbers will come out in the final release that aren't in the initial release are things like trade projections, so which country is going to import our pork and so forth, aren't included in the early release. Some things like how large the herd's going to be were released in the early numbers. I include this for a couple reasons. This one is the corn chart. Obviously, we have lean hog and other parallels we'll show you later, but at the very bottom, I put purple. Jim, yes, I'm happy to be at K-State. I know where my W-2 comes from. There's a lot of purple on these slides. Down at the bottom, you can see USDA was projecting basically 350 corn for the next 10 years. Now, as a sidebar, as an economist, I have to recognize that nobody's forecast, my own included, are far from perfect. These kind of forecasts tend to be pretty good at telling you the long-term trends, but really bad at telling you anything about year-to-year variability. So keep that in mind, right? You know, this kind of an exercise would have very little value in trying to tell you why lean hogs have fell for the last 8 weeks, for example. But I think they are very useful in trying to understand how output prices tend to align with production costs. And that's the case for corn, is we think that long-term we're going to have corn prices that are closer to the cost of producing it. All right, so that's the feedstuff story. Everybody follow that general point? It's really simple. Corn's cheaper, feed's cheaper, we're going to produce more meat. Okay. Now we're going to get a little bit more detailed as we go forward, and that's what type of meat and how fast are we going to produce more. So here's a series of slides that is, I'm going to show you pork and beef and broilers and then the total, that are both historical and then projections, quarter by quarter, of how much of each meat we're going to produce. And of course, I'm going to start here with the pork slide. Same kind of color and scheme I noted earlier. The red is the previous five-year average. The dark blue was last year, 2014. Light blue or turquoise. My grandmother is a Mary Kay salesman. She probably wouldn't be happy that I don't know those colors perfectly, but let's call it turquoise. You guys get the point. And then brown would be the 2016 numbers. I put a star around the current first quarter because we're sitting there and we're going to have more pork is the projection. And if you look for the next three quarters during this year, as well as all four quarters in 2016, projections are more pork, more pork, more pork. That is different than if we look at beef. Same slide, but now we're looking at commercial beef. And I put the star, again purple, because I like K-State, on the first quarter for 2016. That's the first quarter where we're projecting a year-over-year increase in beef production. Okay. Now, some will say that the most recent January cattle inventory report will change that. I think some context is important. Yeah, we might have a little bit more beef than we said before, but we've got very tight beef supplies. You know, most of that story hasn't changed. Pork industry is in the process of expanding. So is the beef industry, but it takes so much longer to expand beef. I think it's still appropriate to say it'll be 2016 before we have more beef showing up. Contrast that with broilers. The broiler industry kind of beat the pork industry to the punch on pulling the trigger on expansion, and they're able to do it faster, right, in the more magnitude than they choose to. You guys understand that. So all of these or higher quarter over quarter. Sum that up, as well as add turkey into that, but I'm not showing you the turkey slide because it's smaller. We have more total red meat and poultry production coming at us. I put the star first quarter right now. U.S. consumers are going to be provided more meat pounds in general, right, this quarter than they have in the past. Some of that easing of high retail prices for some products is probably going to start occurring now because we're taking the edge off of the tight supply story. Right? We're going to talk a lot about demand in a minute, but simply from a supply perspective, particularly pork and broilers, we're increasing production. Okay? To wrap this out on a multi-meat perspective, and hopefully you guys understand why I'm making this start there, is this is the same 10-year projection information from USDA. I showed you the corn slide a minute ago. This is the per capita consumption slide for the different meats. And I have a couple different things noted here that I just want to verbally call your attention to. At the top, we have beef. And it's not until 2018 that the projecting per capita beef consumption will increase. Now, that might become 2017 with the most recent report, but it's still a ways ahead before aggregate per capita consumption goes up for beef. Contrast that with pork, broiler, turkey, and then total for all meats. Here in 2015, we're going to start the increase. And it's going to continue for the next 10 years as their long-term projection. So we're going to produce more. But even then, some context is important. So down at the bottom, I've put another text box to give you some longer-term comparisons. This projection is out the year 2024, so 10 years out, have total red meat and poultry production coming in at 215 pounds per person. That's U.S. per capita consumption. That would still be less, albeit just 1 pound, but still less than 2008. So we're going to produce a lot more meat, but still less per person. Right? Now pause and think through how that can happen. One is we have more people in the country, right? So we're divided by more people. Secondly is what I haven't shown you, but it's in these forecasts, is projections for ongoing exports. So So not only are we going to produce more, we're going to shove more out of the country, and we have a growing population, so it's going to be less per person. Okay? We can talk more about that if you want, but I don't worry about us swamping the domestic market if we keep exports open, if we give export customers what they want, and if we have favorable trade deals. And we can talk about all those ifs if you want, but that's embedded in these kind of forecasts. Okay? Last thing I'll give you on this multi-meat kind of forecasting synthesis of the year is if you don't follow the daily livestock report that CME puts out, I encourage you to do that. It's currently free. It may not be free forever because they're asking for donations, but nonetheless, it comes out every day. And it's not just for pork. Right? It's a useful resource of multi-species. I'll give you the link up here. I encourage you to make use of it. But at the end of the year, and they tend to do this every year, Steve Meyer and his cohort, Lynn Steiner, put out this kind of list of what they think went on in 2014, what they think matters most for 2015. And there's five big points that I think are germane to keep in mind, and we can kind of have a debate about whether these are bullish or bearish for the pork industry. At the top, we have to recognize the pork industry and the beef industry in particular had a really good 2014 from a meat demand perspective. I'm going to give you exact numbers of that in a minute, but pork demand is actually the second best it's been since 1990. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about that and how that occurred, but frankly, the public paid more for pork than they had to. Yes, we offered them a fewer pound, but those prices we observed were higher than we expected. They don't have to do that. But if they're bidding over those limited pounds more than we expect, and they're seeing value in them, maybe their consumer incomes are higher than we think. There could be a host of things going on. But that's more money coming into the pork industry than we anticipated. That's a very positive thing. The ability for that to continue into 2015 is unknown, but it's going to be very necessary because we're asking consumers to pay record prices. As a sidebar, I would argue one of the reasons that lean hog and feeder cattle futures have been off a lot since mid-December or so would be growing concerns about global demand, basically, in general. There's other reasons beyond that, but I think that's a big part of it. Second would be U.S. economy. You know, we still consume the majority of pork, the majority of beef, the majority of broiler meat here in the U.S. So each of those industries is highly dependent on U.S. consumers. So, you know, to the extent that you're bullish or bearish on U.S. GDP growth and their willingness to buy meat proteins, that will shape 2015 a lot. A lot of people are forecasting 2015 to actually have some W-2 growth for the average consumer, and that would be good for meat demand. You know, if that's realized, that's a positive. The bearish tone of that would be we've had several years of GDP growth without the average consumer having income growth, and therefore meat demand may not be benefiting from that. Third, and these are specific by industry, broiler growth. You know, there's two things I'm certain of, and one of them is more broiler meat's coming. That's probably the most certain thing I can bring to you today, is those wheels are well in motion. The second half of 14 that was started, there's a lot more chicken coming in 2015, and to the extent that that puts pressure on both pork and beef in 2015 has to be monitored. Number four, pig saved per litter. I think we all know, and I'll give you exact numbers about the December, quarterly hogs and pigs report in a moment, but the breeding herd is expanding. What's less known is how many more pork pounds are going to come from that, particularly because of how we manage PEDD and PERS, exactly what that is. One way to describe this is, I think there's a lot of uncertainty on exactly what that impact will be between actual impact of PEDD and PERS and therefore the number of market hogs that we have. Going through my own mind as I was prepping for this morning, there's uncertainty on how long I'm going to be able to make it before my voice gives out. Likewise, there's uncertainty on how many pigs are actually going to be harvested from these more cells we put in the system. That's one way to keep this stuff in line. And then number five, range pasture conditions. This is particularly relevant for the beef industry. The wheels are in motion, we're expanding the beef herd, but that could be reversed if we had a renewed drought in Southern Plains and so forth. So none of us are weathermen, but again, Meyer and Steiner, when he points this out, as we had a reversal back to 2012 drought, we could easily reverse the beef expansion part, and that would be germane for the pork industry. Okay, so that's my best attempt to give you a multi-meat summary. We have more pork, we have more broiler, eventually we have more beef coming, okay? Feed costs are coming down, margins have looked better than the past. I'll show you in a minute, 2014 is a great year. That's the background for what we're talking about now. Getting into the specifics of the pork industry. 2014, we had lower supplies than in the past, so we had some supply side support for prices. Most of us recognize that. Going forward, hopefully I've made this clear, but I'm going to say it three or four times, is the exact number of commercial slaughter is not real known at the moment. Because I think we understand PEDD and PERS better than we did a year ago, better than we did 2 years ago, but they're still mixed. And there's people in this room that have mixed opinions on exactly how much we have our hands around that and regionally how that varies and so on and so forth. And that'll have a lot to do with how many pigs we actually harvest in 2015, 2016. I'm a lot more concerned about what that net relationship is the size of the breeding herd. I think we have pretty good measure that we're adding sows and we're going to add more sow barns and so on and so forth. On the demand side, I encourage you to seriously think about what demand is. It's not per capita consumption. That's just how many pounds we produce and how many are consumed. demand is, what's the value of those pads, right? What's the consumer paying for those products? And it's important to recognize there's an important difference there, because prices we observed throughout 2014 occurred because we had not only supply side support, but we had demand pull. We had retail pork prices that were higher than they had to be simply given supply changes. Consumers paid a lot more for those pork products than yours truly thought they probably would have to. That's a very positive statement. Specific numbers you can read on here. I track something called a quarterly and then an annual pork demand index, and I'll show you the annual numbers here in a minute. But every quarter in 2014, the demand index in econ speak improved or shifted to the right by at least 5%. So you can see the exact numbers. Fourth quarter was off the charts good. But really what that means is, once I account for supply side changes, so I know how many pounds are entering the system, I have some kind of assumption on how consumers will respond to higher prices, right? If we reduce supply, we expect prices to go up a little bit. I get basically this expected price change number. If I compare that to the actual price they paid, then I know what happened to the demand curve. If prices went up more than they had to, given the supply change, I know demand improved. And that's what happened throughout all of 2014. Now, we can talk at length about why that happened and how that can happen and how you maintain it. But my main point here would be, you have to recognize it's not just the tight supply story that led to those record pork prices and therefore record hog prices, but consumer demand was very strong too. And it's very important that as we remove the tight supply part of this story, which I'm here telling you we're already in the midst of doing, it's going to be even more important that we understand and monitor and improve pork demand going forward. This is a chart now, my colleague's actually a former student from here. Purple goes a long ways, Jim. Lee Schultz got his PhD from our department. He's now at Iowa State. For those of you who know Lee, he would be John Lawrence's replacement there. And he monitors and tracks this farrow to finish, barometer of returns for the industry. That's why I'm showing you this chart. You can see just how good 2014 was on this chart. It's basically a 10-year history for this exercise of what the typical Iowa farrow to finish operation experienced. Now, as a geeky sidebar, because not everybody lives in the world of Excel charts like I do, before 2014, you would have been okay with a y-axis that only went up to $50 per head. For the four of you that are still awake and the two of you that have done these charts before, you know what I'm saying. When you look out to 2014, there was a couple months that were off the charts, but even the year is an average $60 returns for 2014. Very, very good year. So everybody that 15 months ago projected $62 returns, raise your hand now. Not everybody at once. All right, I don't know a single person was projecting that good for the year. Maybe individual months and so forth, right? But for the year as a whole. Hopefully you understand my prior points, but you had both supply and demand pulling in the correct direction that enabled that. I'm very happy the pork industry had that good of a year, but I also think it's important that everybody recognize that's probably not the new norm either. It's probably an outlier in hindsight. At the bottom, we're gonna come back to this in a minute, is these same numbers that Lee pulls together. For 2014, the break-even price in his series was $73 on a carcass basis. I'm going to bring that back up in a minute when we talk about 2015 returns, because it's going to be germane when we're trying to understand what the market's done in the last 6-8 weeks. Quarterly hog and pigs report, more pigs are coming, right? We can dissect this more if you want. 3-4% larger herd, basically, depending on which row you look at. We all recognize that. That's not new news now, but it just reiterates this. We're in the process of expansion story. Here's the long-term charting of that same information. So the December 1st breeding herd, going back to 1989, most of us know we have a smaller herd than we used to, and that's okay because we get more pigs for every sow, we produce more pork for every sow in the system. There's lots of ways to make that point, right? But we don't need as many sows as we used to give the consumer a certain number of pork pounds. That's important because we're not going to need to expand the herd as much as some think to hit a given pork production target. But if you look at the bar all the way to the right to 2014, you can see the notable increase in the labor work, right, that's in that most recent report. But some context is still important because, yes, it's larger than the last 5 or 6 years, but it's still a smaller industry, historically speaking. Okay. Here is my comment on the uncertainty on the impact of PEDD, PERS, animal health in general. Long-term trend, one of the few things that was incredibly predictable was we'll continue to increase pigs per litter for a long time. And then, oops, right? You guys understand this much better than I do, but that was the hiccup, right, from a supply perspective that occurred because we had fewer pigs coming out of the system. The uncertainty I was alluding to earlier is whether that becomes kind of a plateau mark going forward or if we renew that trend. And I'm not here to tell you what the answer to that is. That's beyond my expertise, but I do fully understand the economic impact. If we renew this trend, we need fewer and fewer sows. If this is a new plateau, we manage this, but when we peak out at 10.2 or something like that, that's a different story. Okay, there's more, you know, technical expertise in the room on that than I have, but it's important to recognize there's obvious economic implications of that. My last comment on the December herd, before we get real big picture for a moment, is breaking down the information in that report by state gives you some insight on where Kansas sits. And Jim, in his introductory comments, alluded to this a little bit. But what I did here was I took those December 1st breeding inventories by state for 2014 versus 2013, 2014 versus 2009, so 5-year change, and then 10-year change, just to show you what patterns have been occurring over time. We all recognize Iowa and North Carolina, right, are the big players in this. So I have this in order of largest changes. Down at the bottom of Kansas, and there's 10,000 more sows December 1st than there was December 1st of 2013. And if you go back to 10-year change, it's 15,000 more. So Kansas is, I would argue, slowly expanding the breeding herd. In aggregate, we're shrinking, right? It's 11,000 fewer in the country. We don't need as many sows, right? Keep that in mind. But we're increasing it in Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma, right? Shrinking it slowly, maybe, in Iowa, and certainly we're all aware we're shrinking it out in North Carolina. We generalize that, we're moving the herd west, probably a little slower than some of the media would describe it, right? But we're moving the breeding herd a little bit west. We can talk about this in Q&A if you want, but there's a lot of animal health concern with repopulating a lot of it in Iowa, right, as opposed to the breeding herd being outside Iowa and sending the market food that way. Here's the same information looking at a share of the U.S., for those of you who like to think of things this way. It's the exact same chart divided by the size of the U.S. herd. You know, 3% of the breeding herd is in Kansas as of December 1st, and that's not much different than it was 5 and 10 years ago. So as a percentage of the national herd, we haven't really changed the story. Maybe a little bit of growth, but not massive change there. There's a reason I highlight that for you. This is probably my messiest chart. I'll apologize a little bit for it. Not a lot, because you can pull the exact numbers later. I encourage you to make use of the arrows, not the exact numbers. You can read the numbers later. This is information again from LMIC. It's quarterly. It has 2014 actual numbers and the projections for 15 and 16. And I have two slides like this. This is the supply side, if you like, slide. So commercial slaughter is the first set of information on your left. And I'll just point out, we had almost 5% lower commercial slaughter in 2014. We had a notable increase, 3% increase in dress weights. Most of you recognize, right? We put a lot more pounds on those animals. And the net impact was we had 1.5% fewer, basically, pork pounds being produced. So hence the down arrows, right? Hence my statements about the tight supply part of 2014 that was supportive on prices. Going forward, 2015, 2016, in some sense, we're going to reverse that. We're going to start increasing commercial slaughter. So projections of 3.7 more animals slaughtered here in 2015, and another 3.2% more in 2016. I'll highlight that LMIC is assuming no increase in dress weights. They're also assuming no reversal in those higher weights in 2014. So basically, you get the same percentage increase in pork production. If you want to highlight a risk factor, is if we add another 1 or 2% to dress weights, that's that many more pork pounds that are coming. If you want to think through that for a moment, that's still possible, right? So we could have not just 3.7%, but maybe 4, maybe 5% more pork if we start notably increasing dress weights again. I'm not sure we'll do that because the 3% increase is pretty large in 2014. So I also want to point out, this information was pulled together as of December 31st. I'm going to show you what's changed since December 31st in a moment. But before I do that, I also want to point out, you know, we all know who Ron Plain is, and I respect Ron's opinion and views on this. I don't think any one person can beat the market regularly, so don't take this the wrong way. But it's important to recognize just what Ron's take was at the same time. And Ron put out on the 26th that he basically thought LMIC was understating how much expansion was going to occur. More narrowly, LMIC is saying 3.7% more slaughter in 2015. He said no, it'll be 4.6. So if we have that much more, obviously that's going to put pressure on prices, right? And I'll show you what he put out there on this slide in a second. LMIC's numbers, 2015, is per capita consumption is going to go up. Over here, 14% pull down in pork prices. They've come down a lot more than that since this has come out, right, on Christmas Eve, and I'll show you that in a moment. But basically a reversal is we had a 16% increase in hog price back in 14. We're going to give back 14% of it. In a minute, I'm going to show you we've given back even more than that, actually, since we put out on New Year's Eve. If you take Ron's numbers, right, his same estimate that, no, we're going to add hogs quicker than LMIC says, then he also said, no, that 85 to 89% dollar range for the year that LMIC put out, it's too high. His average price projection is actually 84. I think we all follow that point. He thought more pigs were coming, and maybe in hindsight, he was right. It was just a few weeks after that, but nonetheless, that's important to recognize. Okay. Any questions on what I've thrown at you right there? So I told you that it's very important to understand meat demand. This is dear to my heart, and I always am on a mission to educate people about this, but I think it's particularly important if we all accept the fact that supplies are going to increase, the ability to maintain profitability is going to shift more and more towards the demand side. Otherwise, we're going to have a bloodbath, I think, on profitability if we don't have some, at least holding of the demand needs in 2014. That doesn't sound real rosy, but I think you have to think through that for a moment. To fix demand, in the 80s and 90s, both beef and pork had challenges on this. First, you have to understand it. I'm not going to sit up here and be on my bully pulpit and beat this in your head the whole time, but rather I want to highlight a resource. For those of you that kind of agree with me, we need to understand it and want to do something about it, I encourage you to make use of this resource. Wayne Purcell is a predecessor of mine that he's really the father of these demand indices that I alluded to that me and others now maintain. And I encourage you to invest the time in understanding those. And here's that index. So I maintain quarterly and annual on our Ag Manager website. You can see where this is posted down at the bottom. And I want to summarize basically the annual story for 2014. The way I track this, my statement is in 2014, demand increased 7.8% for pork products compared to 2013. And this is just simply the plotting of those changes over time back to 1990. That is the second best year since 1990, and it's the best since 1998. One way to drive this point home is in this text, and I want you, I hope, to read this on your own and think through this a lot. We shrunk per capita consumption by 0.6%. If you follow my numbers earlier, right, we had lower supply adjusted for a number of things. Consumers here in the U.S. ate a little bit less pork. If the inflation-adjusted pork price had went up 0.74%, then I'd be sitting here saying demand didn't change. Stated differently, given that reduction in pork pounds, I expect the prices to go up a little bit. Narrowly, not quite a percent. And had that happened, I'd be saying demand didn't change, just the supply curve shifted, basically. In reality, prices went up 8.5% once I adjust for inflation. If prices go up that much, and it goes up a lot more than it had to given the supply change, then in econ speak, the demand curve moved in the correct direction. Pork prices were higher than they had to be, therefore your hog prices were higher than they had to be given supply side. Does everybody follow that point? One way to think about this would be you could have almost an 8% drop in the pork prices. You would have an 8% drop in pork prices, almost 8% drop in hog prices in 2014 had demand not improved. So something close to half of the price increase that occurred in 2014, you could attribute to demand growth, obviously the rest to supply side. All right. I know I'm beating this in your head, but I don't think enough people appreciate it because it's very, very important. So where are returns going in 2015? 2014 is really good. The most recent kind of analysis of those Iowa returns and projections going forward, that the DLR series, and I noted earlier from CME, was as of November 4th. And I think it's useful to use it because obviously prices have changed a lot since then. So I'm going to walk through what it looked like then and what it looks like now. As of November 4th, using the Iowa process, it was projected, right? We knew most of 2014, the returns were going to be $53. They ended up being better than that, if you remember, because December turned out to be a little better than they were forecasting. 62, I think, was the number when I showed it to you earlier. And they were forecasting 2015 returns to be $32. So not as good as 14, but certainly nothing to sneeze at for those of you who've been around a while. But what's happened since then? Right? Nasty chart, but I'm going to highlight two main points. Corn prices, as a proxy for the feed cost side, yeah, they've changed some. This is November 4th prices on the board versus February 3rd prices. Here's the individual changes, right? There's actually been a small decline in corn price until we get out to a new crop. If you just do a simple average, corn's 6 cents higher, right? Just to be real crude here for a moment. But let's just call that no change, just for simplicity for a moment on the corn side. Over here, lean hog prices, again, November 4th, because I'm matching the date of this chart from CME, versus February 3rd. 21 decline all the way down to about a $5 decline on the October contract, and again, that December contract's off a lot more. Simple average of these, just to make it simple for a moment, $12 decline if you just weight all those contracts the same. So obviously profitability's been squeezed, right, projected profitability, since November 4th. Everybody follow that point? Pretty simple point. In a minute, we'll talk about maybe why that's occurred, but before I go there, look at these current prices, right, 66, up through low 80s, and then back down to 69. And if you think feed costs haven't changed a lot, and therefore break-even prices haven't changed much, which I'm comfortable making an assumption at the moment, then that $73 per hundredweight break-even number is a good one to use for thinking through this. So if you do this, let's take 73 bucks and look through here. Basically, currently the market's projecting the summer might be profitable. For anybody that entered the first quarter unhedged or unprotected, it's not going to be. And when we get to the back end of the year, it's not going to be. Now, obviously, some people were covered going into the current fall, but it's a cash-to-cash strategy. If you're, if you're taking the price the market's offering you as we go, it's kind of the way I'm telling this story, then the profitability in 2015 has shrunk a lot, and depending on which month we look at, it's actually red ink now. Does everybody follow that? Okay. I think the wheels of motion on expansion are already started, and this is a very aggregated way of looking at break-evens, because obviously there's a lot of variation in actual cost structure. So that $73 number doesn't fit everybody. There's probably somebody in this room that $65 is your break-even number. I also have to point out there's probably somebody in this room that it's $80, and you need to recognize that. So, I mean, it cuts both ways. There's a lot of variation around that average break-even number. But I mainly want to highlight there's been a notable change in excitement on returns in 2015, and that might mute some of the expansion we've been talking about. I think we're still going to expand the herds. A lot of stuff is already initiated, right? But I think we have to recognize. There's uncertainty on both, which is why I include this slide. Right? No, that's okay. I'll give you your $5 later for asking, Jim. That's a good segue to that. Sometimes it works that way. So the germane question would be is why have lean hog prices dropped, right, since that point in time? Because that's what I'm highlighting is a notable output price reduction in that story. There's probably more than three things you could put up here, but there's at least three I think we have to think through. One would be there's definitely concerns about meat demand, to answer your question, Jim. I think market participants are mixed in the extent to which they think the consumer will keep paying record prices. I particularly think they're mixed on global economic growth prospects and therefore the prospects to continue to export more and more. There's mixed views on that. And I think the trade is kind of beating up lean hogs on and some bearishness there. On the supply side, which is kind of point two, is maybe there's a growing sentiment that we understand. I don't want to say control and have arms around. I think that's probably naive. But we understand PDB and also PERS more, and therefore our ability to translate more sales into more market pigs is a closer to one-to-one relationship than it was in the past, and therefore more supply of hogs and therefore pork is coming. And if you accept that, then that's going to beat up the market also, right? That's bearish for prices. And then third you have, and I think this third one might be a little bit more temporary, but nonetheless it's been going on, is notable growth in the strength of the U.S. dollar, which is not good for exporting any ag commodity. We all follow that. But also, the one that I think is probably temporary is the port issues on the West Coast. Our ability to get commodities out of the U.S. heading towards Asia has definitely been hampered. We can talk about that more in Q&A. That's not only hampering, you know, lean hog futures across the board. That's a problem. But all of these are reasons that lean hog prices have fell off. We could probably add to it, but this would be my key ones to point to. Number three, I think, will resolve itself at some point, right? That pressure might disappear. Points one and two might be here for quite a while. Does that answer your question, Jim? Okay. All right. I'm going to skip those two slides for a moment. Other big issues, just to kind of wrap this out, and you guys can throw some questions at me if you haven't. Economic considerations for expanding the herd was my title, and there's lots of things we could talk about. I tried to give you a broad summary of the situation. I'm going to give you some other things to think about because some of you will be bearish, some of you will be bullish on this point. The industry's capacity relative to the herd size is something we have to be aware of. Depending on whose numbers you use, by the end of 2016, there may not be enough processing hooks relative to the number of pigs in the system. And that obviously varies regionally. We can talk about that more if you want. But if you are a producer in the room and you're concerned about that, that's going to mute your interest in expansion. If you're not worried about it, then it's not an issue there, but I want to highlight that. MCOOL, mandatory country of origin labeling, continues to be a drag on the industry. We could talk about that if you want, but that definitely is a bear on trade relations as it relates to all this. Poultry trade bans, most of you probably have followed, you know, poultry issues in the Northwest, which is not where most of our broiler meat comes from, but nonetheless has led to some adverse developments on poultry trade, stacking up a little bit of poultry here at home, spillover on pork prices is real from that. It's hard for me to tell you how long that will last. That's the nature of international trade, but you have to recognize that's going on. There's mixed views on the lower oil price. On one hand, lower oil price means everybody in this room has higher disposable income, and therefore maybe we'll buy more meat. That's a real observation. On the other hand, maybe lower oil price means the global economy is not growing, and that's an issue for how much more meat they want. The balance of those two is mixed in the market. Back to Jim's question for me a little bit, but I think we have to monitor that and see how that sorts itself out. Market hog price discovery, I'm not sitting here with a solution for it, but if you are a producer, think about expansion, and you're worried about this, you need to think seriously about that, because that might get worse, not better, as particularly regionally. I've given talks in the past, and actually in this venue, about how consumer statements about how they want their pork produced don't necessarily align with where they're willing to, you know, open the wallet for. I'm happy to entertain questions around that, but my synthesis there would be that's the new normal. Now, that's what you operate in, and it's not unique to the U.S., but there's going to be some frustrations with that going forward, and I just encourage everybody to recognize it. You don't have to like it, but recognize that's what it means to be a pork producer, and that will, if you like, weed out some interest in expansion, because not everybody likes that environment. In aggregate, those add uncertainty. Like I said, it's going to reduce interest in expansion. All right? I strongly encourage everybody in the room to do some self-assessment and what your comparative advantage is. I'm probably coming across more bearish than you want me to, but I think long-term, the average producer in the pork industry, like other industries, has zero economic return. Average, right? There's a lot of variability around it, but you need to know where you sit relative to that, and particularly you need to know where your cost structure is compared to average. I can give a whole talk on that if you want, but as we expand supply, it's going to be more and more important, and we're going to look back on 2014. There's probably a lot of people that made money in 2014, even though they did not have any favorable cost structure. That's not fun for me to point out. But in reality, the sooner you do that homework and recognize it, the more confident I am you'll make good decisions going forward. That's individual operation point. The same thing holds for the country as a whole, right? The U.S., or NPPC leadership and so forth, need to assess where the U.S. sits relative to other global competitors. And I actually think we have a comparative advantage in many ways in that story, but we have to think through that, okay? So my last key question would be, I do think the world wants more pork. I think that's pretty clear in general. There's a lot of challenges in getting it to them. The question is can the U.S., are we ready to provide it to them? And I'm going to ask you, I'll take another drink of coffee, and I'm about done. This is a projection from USDA, and it's dated November 13. Again, it's going to be updated. The same exercise I said earlier, where in 10 days, new numbers are coming out. But the long-term trends, I don't think are going to change. This is a projection on pork imports over the next 10 years, and I put some purple around the areas of the countries that are expected to import a lot more in the future. China, Hong Kong, South Korea, Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean are all countries that are projected to have notable growth in their pork imports over the next 10 years. I don't think USDA's numbers are going to change that general story. Okay? That's the point of this slide. The question is, those major pork importers, do you think they're going to ask questions about how the pork is produced like the typical U.S. consumer or customer or voter? I think the answer to that is no, right? So that's a challenge in this story. And that could come across as a bearish point because your growth market doesn't align with restrictions on how we produce meat, right? So I'm highlighting that for point one. Point two that's more optimistic is that issue is not unique to the U.S. So this slide is the same information, but now it's major pork exporters. And I've put purple around Canada, the EU, and the U.S., and we have their market shares in here. And in short, when you add those three countries or areas up, you've controlled for a lot of global exports of pork. We all recognize that. Why am I highlighting this? Yes, there's individual differences between Canada, U.S., and European Union, but in many ways, all three of those countries or regions are dealing with changes in how they produce, how they document, how they verify, and how they respond to pressures domestically, and how they operate. I'm highlighting that because you may not like that, but if you are among the bulk that's going through the same thing, then in some sense, again, this is cold, is you're able to pass on the cost more because you're not the only one dealing with that problem. If this issue is only going on in Canada, or in the U.S., and Canada, EU, and everybody else up here did not have to do the same thing, then I'd be much more bearish, right? The fact that all major pork exporters are going through that gives you some pause on maybe we're able to pass some of these costs on because there's only so much pork outside of those areas that's being produced. Okay? All right. Reasons to be bearish. I've made most of these points. There's reasons to be bullish. You get to read these on your own as I'm going long. This is my summary slide. Overall, I think we're going to expand the herd. I don't think there's much doubt about that. We might mute it some, given the last few weeks. I think the wheels of motion, those are long-term decisions. I think we're going to do that. I'm pretty bullish on global meat demand. I'm pretty bullish on where the U.S. pork industry sits in that story. But we're going to have to answer to foreign customers in a different way than we did in the past. and you're going to have to produce and document and verify things here different than you did in the past. There's going to be cost of doing business, and not everybody's going to like that, but I think we can manage our way through that. At the end of the day, I think it's an exciting time for the entire livestock complex. There's been some bearish tone the last few weeks. I'm trying to highlight that here, but in many ways, I think it's still an exciting time. There's a lot more money at stake than there used to be. We have to recognize that. Not everybody likes that either. And I'll just simply end with this last quote, because I'm about out of my voice entirely. It's not your father's world anymore. I point that out not because I'm trying to be the young guy up here. I'm younger than most of you in the room. But rather, the world of producing pork is different than it used to be. You don't have to like it, but I strongly encourage you to recognize it, because I have full faith that if you recognize it, you'll manage and adjust and plan more aligned with what it's going to look like in the future to operate than if you have a backward-looking lens. I know that's easy for the academic guy up here to say. Sorry for that, but it is my best, honest, ethical advice, is I think you'll manage better if you come to terms with that. If you can accept that and you know and leverage your comparative advantage, then I think you're well-positioned to be profitable and succeed going forward. So, Jim, with that, I apologize for my voice. Here's the slide. I'm going to leave it up here on our Ag Manager website. There's actually, as of this morning, the PDF of these slides are already posted. I encourage you to make use of that. We're probably running a little long, but I'm happy to take a question if we've got one.